jealous of your cider, so I...
So you're one-upping me with something much better than cider, I'm sure.
It's bourbon, you know, whatever.
Oh, okay. All right. That's how it's going to be.
It's not a contest, Mike.
Yeah, it is.
It's a gentleman's agreement that I drink better things than you. Because, you know, wine and beer doesn't try to kill me the way it tries to kill you.
Yeah, well, it's a weeknight, so cider. And I'm driving home. Clink.
No, I gotta get a better clink than that. Yeah, because this is a crystal. Leaded crystal has lead in it.
Is it really?
Yeah. I can't use soap on when I clean it. This is what my wife buys me. Lead. Yeah, these it's a scotch glass. It's Riedel. And she got this for me when we were dating. So this is... What, this is like 8 years.
All right, so seriously, though. Leaded crystal. What you can drink out of it, but it's just not very often? Is that...
That's basically what it says. No joke. When I bought it, they're like, do not use these glasses often. It does have lead in it. But in very small amounts, from occasional drinking, it is okay.
All right.
But yeah, apparently the way it's flared out, that flange, is it's to aerate the scotch.
Right.
That extra little bit. And apparently it makes all the difference.
That's got some legs on it.
The bourbon? Yeah. See, this is a sipping liquor.
I guess so.
Yeah. Ugh. Did you ever, like, you live in Long Island, did you ever, we should introduce ourselves. Hello, this is Buddies in Space. I'm Michael Carassi.
I'm S. Michael Smith.
And we are Buddies in Space.
Here we are in a space being buddies. Buddies drinking.
Drinking.
But not drinking.
No, but that brings me to my question. We're sipping. Gentlemanly sipping.
Yes.
Did you ever, like, you lived on Long Island, right?
I did live on Long Island.
You were born...
I lived in Farmingdale. I actually lived... For anybody who's following Long Island beheading news, I was literally right. My apartment was right down the street from where an unfortunate woman was recently beheaded by her son. And the son immediately after ran out and got himself run over by the Long Island Railroad.
The least he could have done is lay down the tracks.
I
so
did
the
not
train
know these people. So
behead him.
It's terrible, but I at least, you know, wasn't a friend of mine or somebody I. It's always better if it's a stranger that has something horrible happen.
Oh, absolutely,
to them.
Yeah. You don't want to have that personal connection to
No, of course not. Good grief. Humans are horrible, aren't we?
Well, we're alive, so yes, as long as you're living, you're doing someone harm.
So yeah, I used to live on Long Island.
And you were born in the South.
I was born in Tennessee.
So, did you ever have that night of drinking? You know, that night. You kind of don't recall, but you recall that it happened, and it's something you talk about for years after.
No, actually, I was a teetotaler most of my young drinking years, I guess, if you would call them that.
Okay.
I did drink a little bit when I was in high school. I drank beer.
Like beer, like Jenny or something.
I don't know. It was whatever was the cheapest stuff for us to get. It was probably like PBR or something. I don't know.
Miller Lite, PBR, yeah.
And, you know, this would have been like the 80s, so sure, throw a Zima in there too, or a
wow.
Bartles and James.
Zima.
Yeah.
Did you ever put the Skittles in them? Remember that?
I did not do that.
It just made them even more sugary than they really were. It wasn't like it really made them better.
Yeah.
In hindsight.
Anyway, I got really sick one time. Some friends of mine and I got a bunch of beer and rented a hotel room.
Oh, yeah. This is the kind of story I'm looking for.
It wasn't even that horrible. I just, I got really sick.
Did you kill a prostitute?
That night. Not that I recall.
Fair enough.
It was really just pathetic. It was like maybe four or five of us guys, and we kept trying to, like, call some girls that we knew or sort of knew. We just wanted to get girls and beer in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it wasn't like, man, this is gonna sound all sorts of awful, but
I I'm all ears now. I'm going to turn off my desktop to get rid of that fan. I can't tell if it's fucking with the sound, but please go on. I'm aiming the aiming it at you.
And this is, you know, our warped, hormone-filled teenage minds. Uh-huh. We're thinking, hey, we've got beer and a hotel room.
What do you
Wouldn't
need?
Girls naturally want to get in on this?
All of this?
Yes. Us, hotel room, and beer. And, I mean, what more do you need to have a party? And I think we had a ping pong ball.
Did you have music?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't remember that much.
Okay, fair enough.
But I remember I have the gist of it in my head. So but it was pathetic, and I don't
did
even
you get
remember.
Any girls to come?
I don't think so. Maybe
they could smell desperation.
Yeah, we might have at some point. I don't even remember that. What I do remember though is throwing up late in the night, and having the wherewithal to lean over to the bathtub because I was on the
toilet.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't throw up into that because I was, you know, occupying that space.
Well, I mean, if you had really good aim.
I did not.
Okay.
I had no confidence in my aim at that point. So yeah, I was like, well, it's either bathtub or floor.
Mm.
Bathtub is probably the better option.
You were not completely
oblivious. Oh, and I wasn't because someone else during the course of the festivities had broken some glass, either a bottle or one of the hotel
ashtrays or something.
No, one of the, you know, the shitty hotel room glasses.
Oh, right, yeah.
Had broken one of those, and I knew that there was glass on the floor in the bathroom.
It was just sitting there broken.
Yeah, it was broken, and it was not cleaned up well at that point. But I did have the wherewithal in my sickened, drunken state to put on shoes before going into that bathroom.
Wow.
And I was proud of that fact.
Yeah, you should be. That's, wow, I'm proud of you now. And this is how many years later?
God, I don't know. That was probably like 88-ish.
Wow. 26 years ago.
Is that really 26 years?
Yeah, I'm pretty good at math. And that was 1988 was 2014.
I was trying not to do the math in my head.
Oh,
I was really trying not to.
I got you covered, my friend.
Oh, thanks.
If you ever need to avoid math, you let
thanks,
me know.
Buddy. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome, buddy.
But yeah, and I didn't drink beer after that for a long time.
And this is before beer tried to kill you.
No, beer never really tried to kill me.
Oh, it didn't have sulfites.
Yeah,
don't like the taste.
I just don't like the taste.
But
probably
not
because of that.
You think
it could
still,
be. I don't
wow.
know. It still makes me gag a little bit when I drink beer.
Damn, that's amazing.
The beer flavor.
Like, even good beer.
I didn't even like it at the time. But I always, you know, was like, well, hey, you just have to drink enough. You'll get to like it. But I never got to that point. I'm like that way with a lot of things. Facial hair, you know?
Do you not like my facial hair?
No. I
just grew it back, man.
I do, and it looks much better.
I look terrible clean shaven.
You look kind of weird.
I look really bad. I do pass androgynously for David. I don't pass for David Bowie, but I do look androgynous with the makeup and the hair.
Yes. I will give you that. But no, I can grow a beard really well.
You can grow a skeevy mustache.
I can do skeevy mustache. I can do mutton chops. I can do full-on beard. Give me enough time, I could probably even match our good friends Colin and Stu.
Whoa.
But I'm not going to try.
Oh, no, but we should.
I can't. I can't stand the feel of it, though. I cannot stand
but
the feel of it.
The shock to Colin and Stu if we waited, like, 6 months and then just rolled in with massive beards. Both of us. Wouldn't that be worth it? I mean, all the uncomfortableness.
No, it would not.
Okay, well, let's just buy fake beards.
Okay.
Because now I really want to see their faces.
No, and people would always tell people who had beards, regular, you know, full-time beards, would always tell
they
me,
time
you just need to, yeah, not time-sharing a beard. That might work, though.
Jebediah, I need your beard for the weekend. I got a hotel room and some beer.
They would always tell me that, you know, if you wait long enough, your beard will get to the point where it is not uncomfortable.
Now, that's true, but...
No, but it's not true!
Well, maybe not for
it's
you.
It's a lie!
But do you mean, like, you couldn't get to this point with my beard? Because I don't have a lot of facial hair.
You don't have a lot of facial hair. I got to the point where you are
okay.
right now.
And it bugged you.
It constantly bothered me.
Now, was it just the neck? Because I have to shave my neck.
I would shave my neck, but it would still be itchy all wherever I didn't shave it.
But your ideal, I had mock invented a device, a belt that blew air upwards so that your clothing didn't touch you either. So
I do have an issue with things touching any part of my body. Yeah,
like normal, not like the awkward, like, where did he touch you, show the officer on the Ken doll, but like actual just normal things touching you.
Yes. Things
that should be able to touch
lingering on me.
But are they malingering on me?
Nah, yes, they are. I don't like my own hair touching me on my face.
Well, you got that problem buttoned up pretty well.
I do. I did have long hair for a while. I kept it in a ponytail.
Wow.
That was like, that still like makes me uncomfortable. The thought of my long hair getting snagged up in my beard stubble. That's awful. That's an awful mental feeling for me.
Oh, man. I can just see you in, like, a coffee shop, and you're, like, late 20s. Ponytail, scraggly facial hair.
Hat.
Of course you had a hat.
I would have a hat always.
Like a fedora or, like, a cap?
Yeah, the cap. The English cap.
The newsboy cap.
No, not newsboy. But it's similar. Driving cap, more like.
Oh, okay, yep.
The ones I have.
Seen. You have a lot of hats.
They're not newsboy caps.
No, you're right. I have paperweight caps.
You are perhaps more of a hat aficionado than I am at this point.
Only because I have a tiny head, and I found the hat maker that makes hats to fit my head, and they look good. I have so many random people, usually women, come up to me, and like when I wear them out, be like, "That hat looks really good on you." And I'm like, "Thank you, it's because I have a tiny head." That's all I ever say. I don't know what else to say to them. They're like, oh, they never know what to say to that. They're like, oh,
okay. I wouldn't know what to say to that either.
Yeah, I enjoy fucking with people. Like, very mild, even if they're being nice. Yeah, just a little bit of like, thank you. Compliments make me uncomfortable, so I'm going to say something to make it even more awkward.
Do compliments really make you uncomfortable?
Yes. When I would actually perform in college, if anyone ever said I did a good job, I would like literally not know. I'd be like, oh, man. Hey, tu, Brute! And then I'd run away naked. I don't know.
Wow.
That's an exaggeration. Yeah, I never really got many compliments in college.
Does this like go back to your parents? Did your family not compliment you much?
No, my mom was really supportive. Mm-hmm. I had, like, the supporting mom.
Sorry, I didn't mean to like get into a whole cycle.
No, so tell me about your childhood. Why is it sexual? There's nothing sexual going on. Why did you bring up sexual? I'm exaggerating for humorous effect.
I didn't.
I didn't actually say it at all.
Actually, but no.
No, I don't know what it is. Well, I know what it is. It's that I haven't reinvented myself in college to be outgoing when I wasn't previously.
Did you? Because I did that too. Mm-hmm. I did that too. And it was this weird thing. I did it over a summer when I was in high school. And I was very not social for a long time. For whatever reason, or mix of reasons.
You didn't drink.
Well...
That was your problem. You know how much stupid shit you like...
This was my freshman year of high school.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So up to that point, I'd been very quiet, very introverted. I still am today, really.
Yeah.
But I can, you know, I can fake being social.
Mm, you're better at it than I am, I think.
Nah, no. Think about what you do for a living. Good Lord. Your job is being social.
I do not go into the office very much because I get distracted by people like coming over to talk to me.
That's being social.
But it's not me doing it. No, but I don't know.
If you weren't good at it, they wouldn't stop. If you weren't a social person to other people,
so I just
people would not keep visiting you.
Hey, Mike, how's it?
Yeah. People would dread going into your office.
Do you? I don't have an office. It's an open floor plan. I have a cubicle.
They would avoid you. They would avoid your cubicle.
I am in the corner, so you actually have to go out of your way to see me.
See?
And
take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I know, except when I'm annoyed because I want to actually do work. Do you have trouble with the lines being blurred or where, like, the persona stops? Sometimes I have that where I'm like, oh, I really don't feel like being outgoing, but I can't not be outgoing today. Like, I can't turn it off.
It's not part of my job, so that's not really not much of an issue for me.
Okay.
But,
when you're out, when you're with actor friends and stuff.
Yeah, it gets a little tiring. It does. And it's not saying anything about the people. It's just for me. It's entirely you. Putting out that energy. I think that's a big part of why I just need to stop doing Unleash for a while. You know, not
Are you going
not back? Anything about the people. No, I'm not planning to go back anytime soon. But
do you mean improv? Well, not improv, but just Unleashed.
Yeah, because it was a social environment, and you know, being that kind of, you know, I was directing it.
Yeah.
It was a lot of mental and emotional energy that I had to put into it, and I just, you know, I had enough at one point.
You did it for a while.
Yeah.
Even the best, when the first time I was in New York City, I was studying at UCB before I was a jaded experienced improviser, realizing how much of a scam it all was that they made you start over every time. When I was idolized, they're called The Swarm. I actually had him on my trunk at one point, the sticker. Outstanding house team at UCB. Some of the best guys I've ever seen. They were all the high-level teachers. They broke up after 5 years, and that was the first time someone pointed out to me, like, just so you know, like, improv teams tend to have a lifespan.
Right.
You know, they reach that point, and then they do other stuff. And that really blew my mind. But, I mean, Unleashed had a really strong run for a while.
Yeah.
And it's natural to kind of ebb and flow, and people come and go. But, yeah, and being a director, it's exhausting.
And they still are going.
Yeah.
And but they've had, you know, they've changed, they've morphed, they do different things, and that's great.
I think you have to.
I'm happy that that's still going.
My college troupe's still going. I say I helped start it. I wasn't the driving force, but I did end up being director. BJ was in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but to go back to my reinventing myself.
Though. Yes, you did over the summer.
Yeah, it was... this is like the nerdiest thing ever. When I was, I guess I was about to start my freshman year in high school. It was either before or after my freshman year, anyway.
So you reinvented yourself in high school?
No.
Okay.
I reinvented myself in the summer before I went into high school.
Okay, I did it in college, but all right.
So I found out about this nerd camp at Purdue University. I was living in Indiana at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Purdue Academic Leadership Seminar. Purdue
Academic Leadership. Pals.
Yes. And wow. That was a tough... that was a tough pill to swallow, but I...
We're gonna be pals this summer.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody hated the name. But it was such an amazing experience for me. Basically, you went there for 2 weeks. You lived in a dorm on campus with other people in your
coming
same
from
group.
Middle school to high school, that's like, wow, that must be huge.
It was a tremendous experience, and you basically chose from a list of classes. There would be like just, you know, a 2 week intensive, and you would take whatever two classes you want,
like every day.
Yeah, well, you would pick two classes, and that would be the thing you do for the whole two weeks. And then you spent the rest of the time doing a lot of social things. So that was the first time I started going by the name Mike, because that's not my actual first name.
That's not.
It's not.
Your first name must remain a mystery.
Yes.
Except to me.
Except to the people that I...
have glanced at your driver's license.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was when Mike Smith was really...
So did you, were you created. Like, was little Mikey like, I'm gonna go by my middle name?
Yeah.
Did you have like that moment in the mirror where you're like, my name is Mike. My name is Mike. I'm Mike. You guys could call me Mike. Like in your different outfits each time for a weird montage.
I didn't do a montage.
Aww.
But my mental state was that I can go by Mike. I can do whatever I want.
Whoa.
I have the freedom to do whatever I want, act however I want, because if I don't want to see these people again ever, I won't have to.
That's true. Did you ever see any of them again?
I did, because I went back the next year.
Oh, to see your pals?
To see my pals. And, you know, out of that, I ended up with my first girlfriend. It turned out that the Mike persona was actually pretty cool.
Where has this guy been all my life?
Was much more popular than the...
S in Smike.
S in the S-named persona. So yeah, that was a good experience, and then I made the decision, you know, after I got out of college, or after I got out of high school, as soon as I got into college, I would go back into being Mike.
But you didn't go to Purdue?
No, I didn't. Didn't want to go to a big state school.
Hmm. Smart.
Yeah, plus the guy-girl ratio was just awful.
Man, that really makes
it's
a difference.
It's an engineering school? Oh, no.
I've talked at length about Geneseo's ratio, man. It really... really colors your college experience, that ratio.
Was it the opposite there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's not the extremes that I've claimed. My wife has gone through great lengths to disprove me, but sure felt like it. Mine was in college. I was a nice guy in high school, and I wasn't, like, so shy that I couldn't talk to people. But I was very naive. Actually, I can probably pinpoint the breaking point for me. And it's incredibly nerdy.
So a breaking point?
That point where you're like,
was it a traumatic experience?
Like, because I made it so... You're going to laugh, because it is so not a traumatic
experience. I hope I'm going to laugh.
No, you are.
And I want this to be funny.
It is going to be funny, and I'm opening my soul here. Good. No, it was that... I think I can go back to this pivotal moment of, like, I so fucking hate the person I am for the silliest reason that I'm going to reinvent myself. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you remember Star Trek Next Generation?
Yes.
You're laughing already.
It was the 80s. It was a big deal when it came back on.
And the 90s, too. It lasted a while.
Okay, it started in the 80s. I think I was in high school when it made its reemergence. But it was in syndication, and it was like, what? Why isn't that network picking this up? What the hell is wrong with people?
Gene Roddenberry is still alive. I mean, there was no reason not to.
Yeah. But yeah.
So Brent Spiner. Spiner?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Data. Mr. Data.
So I knew who that was. Mm-hmm. Right? He obviously has a lot of makeup on in that show, but I knew who that was.
Mm-hmm.
Independence Day comes out.
The movie.
Will Smith.
Welcome to Earth.
You know.
Does he ever actually say that?
I don't know. I remember more of the president, Bill Pullman's, like, speech as a president. Not on this day. I don't even know if that's actually how he said it.
Randy Quaid flying into an alien ship.
It was a fucking emotional moment,
Randy
man.
Randy Quaid, man. What the hell?
Drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Quaid's have had a rough time. I saw it with my mom, by the way. And I remember making her...
You would have been at an age where that probably would have been...
Yeah. Well, my mom was like, she was cool. You know, she was like, oh, I want to, like, do it.
Were you, like, be like, 10 or something? Or 12?
No.
You were a teenager?
Yeah, when did that come out? Mid to late 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was, like, 13, 14. I was born in 81, so if it was 95, I would have been 14.
Okay,
yeah.
95. Well, then, okay, maybe that wouldn't be the movie that you'd see with the mom.
No, but I had younger brothers, so she was trying to be hip and with it.
There's a family. Okay, yeah, yeah. Cool. Okay.
But, so it was just me and her, and I made her remember the taglines. I'm like, day two, or like, on July 2nd, they come. On July 3rd, they attack. On July 4th, we fight back, or some ridiculous thing. I was really into it.
It was a big campaign.
It was a huge, very well-done campaign.
And it was mysterious, you know, when it was like, ID4. Wait, what is
this ID4? Yeah, I know, exactly. So I went... And I was totally in the fucking movie. I was, like, having a blast. Not embarrassed by the fact I went to see it with my mom. And, like, all my nerdy friends were there, too. But I didn't get that Brent Spiner was in the movie.
He was?
He was the goofy scientist with the long hair, invents the probe that looks like a penis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all that.
I sort of remember that.
It's not very memorable. I told you, this is, like, laughably ridiculous.
Yeah.
But
That's kind of a trivial thing.
It's a very trivial thing.
Yeah.
But I was just so... That was just me. I never picked up... I was always the guy who didn't get it. You always had to explain the joke. You always had to point out the thing I missed. That kind of thing. And for some reason, I got so mad at myself when my badass LARPing friend, Jesse Gifford, who still LARPs to this day...
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a phrase that has not been used ever.
Ever.
My badass LARPing friend.
He's like tall, had long hair. He was in the clique of like really smart, really sarcastic guys. If they were friends, they would have turtlenecks with cigarettes. You know, like, hey, stupid American, stupid than you. You know, that kind of thing. So he's like, yeah, well, it's funny that Data was in the movie. I'm like, what? Data? Star Trek? He's like, yeah, Brent Spiner, who was the scientist. And I just got so mad at myself. It's like, why do I never fucking get, and I didn't say fucking because I didn't curse, but why did I not get that?
You didn't curse?
No. I didn't drink. I didn't curse. I didn't do anything.
I can see that drinking.
No, I didn't do any of that.
But you would have been 14, so drinking would be, you know.
I didn't drink until sophomore year of college. I think I was more into other things than drinking.
Yeah. Well, so was I in college. I didn't. My getting drunk in the hotel room, that was the last drinking for a long time.
Well, it sounded like it was quite a traumatic experience. No, they used to call me Father Mike when like you didn't want to go out or you were hungover and looking for something to do because you went out too early. You ended up in my room because I always had the bigger TV than everyone else. So I had like the PS2 before everyone else did. So I was watching DVDs. So I was like watching The Matrix and people ended up in my room drunk. So there would be like 8 girls laid out in my room. I never did anything because I didn't know what to do. At least initially.
That's sad.
It is. But regardless, I just got to this point where I'm like, I need to fucking change who I am and figure out, like, I need to be cool and notice shit. And so when college started, I decided, well...
You decided to be cool and notice shit.
Yes.
I can see that I'm going to decide to be cool, but how do you decide to start noticing shit?
So I equated, I think to this day, I still equate glibness and cleverness with being cool. And I know, by definition, what cool is, especially from a younger perspective, that not caring, seeming to just get it without trying persona.
Yeah.
Like, that, for me, that isn't what I thought was cool. For some reason, for me, cool was, I guess not caring to a point, but, like, being just, like, talking your way out of things and being, like, off-the-cuff funny and that kind of stuff. That's what cool was to me. So that's who I strove to be in college. And I just became a massive asshole. But it worked. And then it took me years to not be an asshole. Then, like, would move back and forth to New York City, and my asshole meter would just, like, fuck it. Like, the carnival thing where you hit the hammer and it hits the... Like, that was like, ding!
But that's... Okay, now that's the interesting part. You say it worked.
It did. I had sex. I drank. I did other things. Women liked me. People didn't like me. I was someone that mattered enough for people not to like.
See that? Maybe that's the key to it.
I think it is.
Because people have an opinion about you.
Right. I was not someone people... I was someone that the teachers liked. I had a teacher pull me aside one day in high school and say, Michael, you're a very nice boy. You shouldn't hang out with so-and-so because he's a bad influence on you. And I didn't even think, like, man, fuck you. It never occurred to me until just this moment, actually, talking about it. I'd be like, what the fuck? You know?
They were just concerned for you, Mike.
Yeah, fuck that. So that's what it is.
So you've kind of come, you let the pendulum go way over to that side, and you kind of, like, it's come back, and you feel like you're more centered now.
I live in a suburban development with a mm-hmm. child and a wife and a car payment and a mortgage, and I'm pretty happy. Yeah, I think I'd say it's kind of middled out.
Yeah.
Haven't really acted at all this year.
You haven't tried.
No, I really haven't.
I mean, aside from the acting that you do as part of your job.
Which, when I'm doing it,
that certainly counts as acting.
I really work at it. One of the other trainers is like, you really train the fuck out of that room. You may want to, like, it's probably exhausting. You might want to calm down. I'm like, yeah, it's a little tiring.
But I know that about you. You can't, you are, like, mentally incapable of half-assing something like that.
Half-assing most things I have a problem with. And that's just about my father. Like, he was just so shitty about me when I do anything halfway.
And you can take that as a compliment, Mike.
Thank you. Because my abusive dad. Thanks, Dad. Actually, I do have a funny drinking in a hotel room story.
Oh, God.
And we did get women in the room for the worst.
See, what did you do? Because we couldn't figure that out.
Oh, well, it's the worst possible scenario. But you're going to hear this and think,
it didn't get
the
rapey,
fuck?
Did it?
It certainly could have.
Oh, my gosh.
No. You have to understand. Okay, so I was with, this is going to sound like a joke. It was me, my recently reborn Christian friend, and my non-Orthodox, sort of lapsed, but still practicing Jewish friend.
These are guys.
Us guys. So mm-hmm. Even though I was an asshole in college, like, we were just very nice guys overall for college dudes. Not so much rapey. not so much of that. So we were in Myrtle Beach, and it was just the three of us. And we had met these two girls on the beach. Right? Nice. Playing football. Like, it was
nice.
It was like fucking it was like a beer commercial.
It sounded like a beer commercial.
And they're like, they were blonde, and they were cute, and they were kind of like,
they have
giggling
swimsuits
and immature.
On?
Yep. And we met them on the beach. We told them where we were staying. It was actually a really nice motel. It was in, like, the, we were in Myrtle Beach, but not the, like, the really trendy part. We're kind of out of the way, like South Myrtle Beach or North Myrtle Beach, whatever the not normal part is. So we're drinking. So, okay, we go to an all-you-can-eat seafood buffet. It's like $25, all you can eat. King crab legs.
Taking the girls to this place?
No.
Okay.
The girls come in later.
Because that's probably a good call for a date.
Well, when you hear what happened. So I had never really supped on crab to any great extent before.
Okay.
So I ate more than I've ever eaten in my life.
Of crab. Of a food that you have not really had.
Of food in general, but specifically crab.
Okay.
Like, I must have made like five trips on just pure king crab's legs alone, not to mention all the other shit.
I admire your stamina there.
Well, I didn't have as much stamina as I thought. Uh-huh. So on the drive back from the all-you-can-eat seafood buffet, I was laid out in the back seat, like physically in pain. Like, if a chestburster a la Alien had come out, it would have made perfect sense based on the scene. So we had all this beer, and we needed to drink.
You know what will make Mike feel better? Beer.
I had no room for the beer. We had a motel room. We were ready. We had some tunes. Mm. We had beer, and I had no room.
So, did you have the ping pong ball?
No.
No?
No. We didn't go that far.
Probably would have. That would have killed you anyway.
Well, yeah.
any forced consumption at that point would have been the end.
It would have been that scene from Seven. I would have been gluttony.
Gluttony.
I was totally heading towards gluttony. So we get back to the motel room. I'm not doing well. I know what needs to happen. I know that I need to make room for the beer. And it's only coming out one way.
The way it came in.
The way it came in. And I'm all like gearing up. Like I'm not bulimic. I've never done this before. But so I'm trying to like.
I understand. And there are times when you just know. The stuff in my stomach needs to not be in my stomach.
It's not going
to
get digested in my lifetime. It's going to take too long. So I'm gearing up to go to the bathroom to, you know, pray to the porcelain god. Mm-hmm. Not sit on it like you, but actually there was no broken glass, thankfully.
Right.
When there's a knock on the door and these two, at the time, fairly gorgeous blondes roll into our room, it gets weirder. This is where it starts to get weird. And the sluttier one.
The sluttier one.
Yeah, there's a sluttier one and a really, like nice, innocent one.
We can't
one.
Use those words anymore, Mike.
We can't?
No.
She had, like, a piercing. Yeah, but
those are. These are bad words these days.
She left her friend with strangers to go hook up with another guy she had met that day.
All right.
Can I still not use the word slutty?
Let's go with promiscuous.
Okay, the promiscuous one.
Okay.
Had run over her friend's foot with a car.
Oh, and in her hurry to get to where the guys and the beer are.
I don't know what happened or how, but that day she had run over her friend's foot. So they came in.
The friend was there with the bad foot.
Yes, and I have a picture I can show you actually, and maybe I'll make it the image. Oh no, we have our logo. I have a picture of her normal foot and then her swollen foot with tire tracks.
Oh my! So she's probably
actually it's in this box. The box that this microphone is sitting on, it is in that box.
So she wasn't even wearing shoes, I assume. It was like flip flops or sandals
She had like a walking, like a crutch.
So at least they got her a crutch.
Yeah, well, yeah. But she needed to ditch her friend that she had run over because she needed to go hook up with some guy.
Priorities.
So she left her with us.
Uh-huh.
Who we had known them.
Just met, yeah.
Just met on the beach. Three guys right. in a motel room.
Right.
And this girl was like 18. Like, I don't think she was in college yet.
Yeah.
Like, this had all the makings of a terrible, like, after-school special or Saw movie. But she was fine because we were all very nice guys, and I was too busy throwing up in the bathroom. So I'll never forget. I'm like swallowing my finger, throwing up. I'm just going to get as gory as possible. And I'm like, you know, over the toilet. And I hear a knock, and it, like, reverberates in the toilet bowl that my head is in. And I just hear very softly, Mike, are you okay? And one of my friends is like, he's fine. He's getting a boot and rally. It's good. And I did. I did boot and rally. As the phrase goes. So the moral of the story, Mike, is if you want girls in your hotel room or motel when you're drinking, young, usually underage, you need to meet them on the beach and then eat too much. And have one of them run over the other one with a car.
I will try to remember that, and then relay that to your son later when he's ready when he's ready to process that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to tell my son that story. And then your daddy threw up so he could drink alcohol. Underage. Yeah, little rapscallion.
And this is why you're going to be blocking the internet, so we can't get to this site.
Oh, I'm more worried about him finding, like, Bukkake than this, so. Dude, fuck the internet. Good God. The internet is as bad for new parents as it is for children.
How do you mean that?
Because you find the scariest the smallest. Sure. But, like, everything's preying on the worries of a new parent, because you don't know. There's no manual. The manual is the internet, and that's a terrible, terrible manual.
Well, the internet is also, you know, kind of this echo chamber where if you're searching for something, you will find it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're searching for things that will kill a baby,
you're going to find in spades. Potential issues with your young child? Oh, they're out there. Yeah. That weird mole? It's probably, you know, flesh-eating bacteria or
Nobody does a Google search for happy memories I'm going to have with my child.
That's a good point. You know, Smike, Gandhi once said that history was only an interruption in love. And I like to think the internet really encapsulates that. Your internet history is only an interruption in love.
And sometimes you just have to flush that cash.
And then drink, boot and rally.
And then boot and rally.
So we both reinvented ourselves. Interesting.
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 And we still are that reinvented persona to some extent.
It stuck. It really did. But then, like, as I've gotten older, do you find that you feel less compelled than when you were younger to be the outgoing person? Because I've seen Smike, Party Smike, and you're, like, a really outgoing person.
I can be.
And it's like, whoa, where was this guy?
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, sometimes it's just the four of us, and we'll be playing a game, and I'll just be, you know, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're playing Puzzles and Dragons, and you have a migraine, and you're still winning the game, but taking too long a turn. Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know. It's all in there.
But do you feel like it comes out less? Or than it used to? Like, but when driving at it, I am finding that I need to be less of the over-the-top outgoing than I used to feel like I had to be. I kind of got my own shit, and it's like, I don't really feel like doing that as much anymore. You know what I mean?
I turn it on when I think it's appropriate.
Okay. So you found that equilibrium, or like, tried it out when I need to.
And you know, it's in doses, I enjoy it.
Oh, it's fun.
Like doing the sake meetups. Mm-hmm. I like that. I can't, you know, I'm not going to do that every weekend.
There's a lot of alcohol involved there, too.
That's true. That would be bad in so many ways.
Yeah, that would kill you.
But yeah, I like that kind of being social. And, you know, when we do an improv show, obviously that's a social thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get out and engage the audience in that.
But that was always the thing with our format, was we were very engagey.
Yeah.
Although now that after we did that two-up show last year, that seems to be fairly common for two-person troops.
Yeah.
The engage the audience thing. Like, you make the audience your troop member.
I think it's a good concept.
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. As long as they're not scared. My mom went to a Jiva comedy improv show. And it was a fun show.
Back in the day. When you were in that.
In Jiva comedy improv, yes. And our director called on her just for a suggestion.
Right.
And she had never been, she didn't know what to expect. She'd never really seen me do improv.
Right.
So she just, like, didn't know how to respond.
And you guys were doing, like, a pretty hardcore comedy sports, theater sports format, right?
Yep.
Unofficially.
Oh, no. Yes. Unofficially. Totally not licensed, or claiming to have a license and not paying for it. Yeah, so when she got called on in the audience, she just totally froze up and didn't know what to do. And it was one of those moments where you're like, oh, yeah, like, you get so used to performing for an improv audience, you forget that there are people who don't know.
And that's okay. Whoever was doing the gets for that show should just move to somebody else.
I think they did. Or they pressed until they got something.
And, yeah, they don't want
to. She didn't freeze in a scared rabbit in headlights or deer in headlights kind of way. It was just like, yeah, like, I'm not going to actually add anything to it. Because my mom didn't know, you know. She's not going to be like the quick-witted, like, hey, I'm an improv audience member. I had five things prepared for this. Plumber, Star Trek, gynecologist. Oh, yeah! It's not my mother. My poor mother, who's played Cards Against Humanity with my brothers and I multiple times.
To enjoy it.
She enjoyed it, but then she quit, like, halfway through, and she's like, guys, I'm done. This is a little silly for me. And I looked at her hand, and she had, like, the most amazing hand. And amazing in Cards Against Humanity is the most vile, awful, fucking profane shit all in one hand. I was like, I would have killed to have this hand, but my mother had it. And it was like jerking off into a puddle of, like, children's tears and, like, lighting a homeless man on fire and then defecating into Newt Gingrich's mouth. Like, these were the cards she had left when she quit. And I was like, I think I understand why my mom quit the game halfway through. Yeah, that'll do it. Erica did the 10 things for Christmas this year.
Oh, right. You get it, like, a mystery box.
Yeah, but she put my name down. So, right. Like, all the personalized stuff is going to be in my name. But she gets to open it. That's the rule.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to be able to one-up the biggest, blackest dick in gold letters that they hid in the box. Like, that's the craziest part, is people might not even know it was there.
They do now.
What is the biggest? What is bigger than the biggest, blackest dick? To infinity? I gotta do something else. I can't think of something larger than the biggest, blackest dicks, Mike. I'm racking my brain. That's all that's in my brain right now is giant dicks, and I can't think of something bigger than the biggest, blackest dick.
I don't know what to say after that.
This is making me uncomfortable.
I'm sorry you have that in your head, Mike.
No, it's fine. I just don't know what to... I don't know where you go from that. All right, total change of topic here. You're looking on Steam.
I'm looking on Steam.
You're on Steam. The video game distribution service.
Yes.
And you see, to your heart's greatest joy, that the perfect game for S. Michael Smith has just been released.
Okay.
What is that game? What is the genre? What is the title? What are the game mechanics? What is the perfect S. Michael Smith game?
Go. The game has already been made.
Oh, okay.
And I played it.
What is it called?
I can't tell you the name of it.
What?
Because it has my name in it.
Why does that prevent you from saying the name of the game? Oh, shit. Okay. Really? That's your perfect game.
It was pretty amazing.
I need to check it out. Was it long?
No. Okay. Well, it depends.
Is it minutia to do, or is it repetitive tasks to do? Like, what prolongs it? It's not a story thing.
Yeah, it is, actually. Okay. But a messed up, weird story.
Well, yeah.
Very meta.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your perfect game. You couldn't top that?
I don't know. So it depends. You know, sometimes I like the weird. I like weirdness. I like things
I would have guessed that about
get you. Crazy. I mean, I freaking love Portal,
mm-hmm.
as you know, so many other people do.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's because it was so. The mechanics were one thing. It was good. The mechanics were great.
Flawless.
And it was. And I usually hate platforming games, honestly.
Platforming first-person shooters in particular are hard to do right.
Yes. But the story and the voice acting and all of that just made it so delicious.
And it gets really zany as you go.
It does. And meta in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like the games that kind of turn inside out on you.
So, I mean, Borderlands does that.
Yeah. To an extent.
To an extent.
Yeah, certainly Borderlands 2 with the character of Jack.
Who is a playable character in the pre-sequel.
I guess so, yeah. He figures heavily into the pre-sequel.
Yeah.
But
you can, I mean, if you had to sit down and say, my perfect game would have... So we've already started. Your perfect game would have weirdness in the narrative. It would have narrative, and it would have narrative weirdness. It would start maybe a little more mundane and then go to Crazy Town.
Yes.
Okay.
Or... It's just Diablo 2.
So what if...
Because it's... And I'll tell you what gets me in that is... The finely tuned, crack-like, mm-hmm. addictive quality of Diablo 2.
It's the most perfectly balanced grinder ever.
Yes. And it's because you know, there... There are things out there that you know are out there that are... amazing in terms of stats,
mm-hmm.
within the game.
Which are ones and zeros.
Which are all ones and zeros, yes. Which just make you better at playing the
game. Right.
And you know they're out there, and they're very difficult to get, but not impossible. Reasonably very difficult. That just makes me invest so much of my time.
So...
It's
okay.
It's,
so your perfect game is a... narrative spiral, right? Mm-hmm. The game that starts fairly mundane and spirals out of, you know, into craziness in a narrative sense, but has a very finely balanced loot drop grind mechanic.
Yeah, but you can't really mix those two. Because
Borderlands kind of did.
No, it kind of did. But once you get into the whole grinding thing, the narrative just grinds to a halt, literally.
What if it didn't have to? What if they find a way to crack it?
Well.
Would that be your perfect game?
I think it would be.
Well, there you go. Wasn't it that hard?
If they find a way to perpetuate the storyline
What if the only way to perpetuate the storyline is to grind? Developers, take note. All those developers who listen to our podcast.
I don't even know how that would work.
I don't either. I'm not a fucking game developer.
Yeah.
Dude, they made a game about a guy who had, like, a bad relationship with his girlfriend, Catherine. Like, they can make a game out of anything at this point.
Yeah, that was an interesting game. I think I played, like, a demo of it. It just didn't really get me hooked.
Isn't he, like, falling down the vixen's cleavage in the cover of the game?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, tied into the whole, like, weird Japanese male-female relationships, which...
My mom's name is Catherine, so I just avoided that game entirely.
Yeah, I can understand that.
It was just going to get too
edible. All right. Okay, so what would your perfect game be, then? Throw the question right back at you.
It's got to have a crazy strong narrative. Like, narrative has to be driving it. Mm-hmm. No grinding. I'm not a fan of grinding.
So, you know, for example, like, BioShock is probably one of your all-time...
BioShock is up there, but I think The Witcher is vies for one of the all-time greatest games. So Witcher is a, and the third one could either make or break my love for that. Like, if the third one works, it's probably going to be my perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a massive open world, which wrings my insides out with fear, because I hate open world games. But it's a
And you played, like, Assassin's Creed up to a point, right?
What a fucking sad story Assassin's Creed is. Assassin's Creed 1 was a great idea that was super repetitive. You stuck with it because it was like the gimmick of, like, oh, you're time traveling through this guy's genetic memories. Like, this is crazy. Like, the story was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're, you know, assassinating people in these really clever, like, interesting ways. It was all really cool. And then 2 was like, oh, now there's a really, really strong narrative to it. Like, now his memories are not this stupid. Like, the first game, you were Altair, which was just like, he was a... It was during the Crusades, that time period.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just, like, really, like, uber 90s badass, no character, you know, video game protagonist.
Yeah.
You're like, you kind of talk like this, and you know, it's like Snake from Metal Gear, but even less interesting.
Right.
But then Ezio Auditore, who was the protagonist in the next, like, 3 games, was, like, this Italian guy, and they modeled Italy really accurately, which I discovered on my honeymoon. And he was interesting. He was kind of a putz and a dick and kind of entertaining. And then Assassin's Creed 3 comes out, and it's awful. And I still have it. Like, I couldn't play it for more than a couple hours. And I'm
like... Was that the pirate one, or was that...
No, the pirate one is apparently really good, but I got so burned. No, it's the Native American one.
Oh, right,
and
right.
I was so excited to play a Native American assassin. Like, this sounded awesome. Like, you're running through colonial America. Like,
yeah, and they had the gimmick where whenever you killed somebody, it was like, it would show you the name of somebody who had died at that time, right?
Oh, they like, totally pseudo-historically tied it all together. Oh, you were totally killing people who were real. Like, historically. But, I mean, I'm playing, I'm like, this is a really fucking bad game, and I don't know why. And then apparently there's this, like, tell-all article that came out about how it's the perfect shitstorm of corporate horrible video game making, and how, like, a slave team of writers were forced to, like, bend to the whim of DLC, and, like, all these awful things, because Ubisoft is, like, a megacorp.
Right.
They're, like, up there with EA. And so, it made for an unenjoyable game, and that's when I finally was like, fuck it. So, like, my friend Ben was like, well, why don't you play 4? And I'm like, because I fucking hated 3. And he's like, that's not a good reason. I'm like, yes, it is. It's a great reason.
I got to go with you on this one.
It's like the drinking, getting sick on beers. Like, it leaves such a bad taste in my mouth. You know, exactly. You know what it is? It felt like work.
Mm-hmm.
You ever had that feeling? Video games should never feel like work. And that game, I had to force myself to sit down and play it. And that is a terrible thing. So.
I understand that. Even when I was in the deepest... throes of grinding in Diablo 2, there was still something that was fun about it.
Right.
It was like, maybe I'm going to get that key to drop this
You could
time.
Burn 5 hours in that game and not feel it.
Yeah.
Every minute felt like an hour when I was playing Assassin's Creed.
This is the same thing I've done 20,000 times
well,
already.
You're the kind of person who goes through Diablo and then replays it on a harder difficulty, right?
Yeah.
And you play different character classes.
Yeah.
That's apeshit bananas to me, but that's because I need narrative, and there's not a lot of narrative in Diablo games.
Yeah.
But I think the reason I think Witcher 3 could be the perfect game for me is because of Final Fantasy VII, which had the same thing. And that is strong narrative. Granted, JRPGs are their own unique kind of strong narrative.
A strong but weird narrative.
Yeah, but it made perfect sense to me at 14.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't questioning the plot holes. But it'll let you step out of the story whenever you want it and just go fucking play an arcade game in the game. And then you can come back. And then it was like, oh, do you want to spend 10 hours like raising a gold chocobo so you can unlock this summon that breaks the game because it's too powerful? Yeah, just do that. Meanwhile, there's a meteor hovering in the sky that's supposed to hit in 4 hours. And I spent about 20 hours of real world time doing other shit.
Yes. And whenever you go to the one town, you're like, oh my God,
it's going to hit.
You got to go and fix this now. Yeah.
But then they say, if there's anything you need to do, go do it. And they always do that in RPGs, right? And you're like, well, shit, I have a backlog of chocobo breeding to do.
Can you wait?
Can you just chill out? Is that all right? And so that, like, still, I can never put that much time into a game again. But that was, and I think Witcher 3 is going to be very similar, where the narrative's crazy strong. It's always been a very strong game. And it's open world, but it's like, if you kill a monster in a town because the mayor asked you to, because a Witcher hunts monsters, then, like, everyone in the town thanks you. Like, they, even just in passing, they acknowledge that. Because, mm-hmm. like, when you're playing Elder Scrolls, like, Elder Scrolls Oblivion 4, which mm-hmm. I love that game. But you could do something, and then it would have no impact on the NPCs. And that really breaks the immersion, you know? Like, I really enjoyed it, but it's like, I'm the guy who just saved the world, and I kept playing. Can you not acknowledge? It's like, oh, hello, world saver. That's all I want. That's all I'm asking for.
A little compliment.
Just a little acknowledgement. A little pat on the ass for saving your life and your children. Your NPC dead, fish-eyed children, because they can never get eyes right. So my perfect game is...
Thanks for killing that monster.
Hey, thank you.
Good job on that.
Thank you, Smike.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Anytime.
Does this make you an NPC now? No one's playing you, Smike. You're just code.
I'm just waiting for the next hero to come by.
So I can thank him as well.
That's right.
Or her. So yeah, Or it.
Maybe it's Claptrap. I don't know. Good job.
Playable. Good job, robot. Yeah, so a game that has an interesting mechanic, extremely strong narrative, and can let me go fuck around for a bit and then come back to the story.
Yeah.
That's my perfect game.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm plunking a lot of money into my graphics card to make sure I can run it. Because that's the other thing, is, of course, that appeals to my, like, tweaker PC gamer side, because they make their games so hard to run. It's like Witcher and Crysis are the hardest games.
And I would imagine that this upcoming, or the new...
Don't say Assassin's Creed, because that's a load of bullshit.
Far Cry.
Oh, they apparently didn't really push themselves too hard on that game.
Really?
Yeah, apparently the story, like, almost directly mirrors Funhouse Mirror Effect, Far Cry 3.
Huh.
I don't know, Far Cry 2 is one of the most boring games I've ever not finished. So, but here's the reason why. They decided, just like in that weird Twin Peaks game... I don't even know what it was called. It's this weird Japanese game that was basically Twin Peaks of the game. But,
I don't remember that.
I'll have to show you. It's,
okay.
It's made by Swery. The Japanese guy's name is Swery. But they decided that you should have to drive distance, the actual distance you were going in game.
Oh. I think I heard about this.
So in the other game, it's like
such a horrible idea.
You have to unlock the ability to actually drive your car well. So in the other game, like the Japanese game, your car just randomly drives off the road randomly. It was just a terrible idea. But there is a fast travel mechanic that I didn't do because you have to unlock it. But in Far Cry, it's not even just that. You're in the jungle, Smike. You're navigating on a shitty 2D map in the jungle. I drove my Jeep off the road and got stuck in palm trees so many fucking times in that game. I was like, fuck this. I don't care if this warlord is killing children. I'm done with this game. But that game did have something I'd never seen before or since, which was a peripheral. And it's like one of those rich kid things that never takes off. But it was like a mood peripheral.
Mood peripheral.
So it would do lighting. It would change the lighting in the room based on what time of day it was in the game.
Oh, like a USB thing.
Yeah, but it was a very specific programmed thing to do. It was like a system that never took off.
To work with a specific game?
Probably they were hoping there was going to be many games, but yeah. It's like D-Box.
Okay.
You know, that in your seat subwoofer that like 3 Blu-rays support and only like Bill Gates has. It's that kind of thing. So I was really curious about it, but it was like $200. I'm like, I'm not going to. This game sucks. I'm not going to do that. But it would be cool to like have the sun setting and like you actually see the sun on your ceiling like moving. you know, it's an attempt to try to make up for a really boring game with immersive.
I am so immersed in this boring experience.
I feel like I'm going
the reality is crushing.
That's why I don't get The Sims. Explain The Sims to me.
I can't, Mike. I can't.
You go to work in The Sims. I could go to work and make money in real life and then play a more fun game. I don't get it.
I never got into The Sims.
The casual gaming market is just... And then there's Nintendo, as we were talking about before we started recording.
Yeah.
But they're like, they're so deep in the hole of casual game, they're trying to get out of it.
But they were, I mean, they were casual gaming before there was such a thing as casual gaming.
Yeah, but I mean, they sold out, so to speak, with the Wii.
Yeah.
You know, and then they just embraced it, and now they're trying to get their geek cred back, and it's like, no, Miyamoto, you're not coming back from that. Stop insulting all the elderly people in the nursing homes playing Wii bowling, because they're your cash cow at this point. You need to embrace that shit.
And now they're doing an exclusive on Bayonetta.
Which her clothing isn't made of hair anymore.
No?
No.
What's up? Did they like sanitize it for the Wii?
I think they might have a little bit.
Oh my goodness. That's and if all the things to like to get an exclusive on and tout Bayonetta. Arguably not a bad game.
No.
Critically, I think a
very well liked game.
But
yeah.
I don't think it sold well at all.
Well, you can only get the new one if you get the bundle with the first one.
Right.
Which
tells you that nobody bought the first one. They have to bundle it with the system.
Well, what Zero Punctuation said, and I find that guy very funny because he's so snarky, is he's like, the problem with that is when you don't really deviate from the formula of the other game, it's hard to tell the difference between the games when you force you to buy the first one or the second one. You know what I mean? Like, Assassin's Creed 3 gave me Assassin's Creed 1. And all that risk doing was reminding me how much more I liked Assassin's Creed 1 than 3. So it was like the reverse effect. But it is what it is. But, yeah, that forced bundle thing. Don't get me started on the orange box. I'm still mad about Half-Life 2 Episode 2.
What? You still have problems with the orange box collection?
I wanted to buy Portal, and why did I have to buy Episode 1
again?
It was
such a bargain to begin with.
Why did I have to buy it? I had to give it away.
You didn't... It was already cheap, Mike.
I had Episode 1 already. There was no need to make me buy it, and I don't care about
Team Fortress. The Orange Box bundle was worth it just for Portal.
I agree with you, but it was $50 when I bought the bundle. So all I could think was...
But it was still worth it. Just for the one game.
But that's not how a consumer thinks.
But you got bonus games.
No, I got forced into buying games I didn't want. I've never once booted up Team Fortress 2, and I've not played Episode 1 since I bought it the first time.
We'll just have to agree to disagree on this one, Mike.
Right, we'll just disagree to disagree.
And shall we leave on that sour note?
Where the fuck is Episode 3? How about that note? Where are you? Where is it, Gabe Newell? Huh?
Will there ever be an Episode 3?
I think they're just going to do Half-Life 3. And they're going to combine Portal with it. Because they were hinting at that at Episode 2.
Yeah.
So. Well, we've covered our perfect games.
Yeah.
We talked about our awkward formative years.
Yes.
Teenage years.
Reformative years, really.
That's true. Reformative years. Hmm. We both drank some alcohol.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Not a lot. I can show you that picture now.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm going to go dig that out. Thanks for listening. I'm Michael C. Carassi.
And I'm Michael Smith. And everybody's going to...
No, they can figure it out now. You're giving them too much.
Yeah, I have.
And we are Buzz in Space. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye. It did stop. I wasn't on anything when I clicked it. There you go.